SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans, from my desk, from home. I had to think about it. I was lucky to get home. When it came to the travel portion, it was tough. It was tough. We got to Chicago yesterday. Even getting to the airport in Phoenix, getting from Tucson up to Phoenix, it was a terrible, terrible accident. Was that the 5? Whatever that road was, and I was lucky. I had a little bit of a time window, and then a delay in Chicago. I didn't get home till 2:30. So both coming and going, unbelievable. But while I was everywhere, I went. Whether it was Los Al and of course the show a week from tomorrow from Santa Anita, that portion, everything was really, really fun. And as always, the time at University of Arizona at the symposium, the enthusiasm of the students, it just, buoys your own enthusiasm. And yesterday, particularly before and after Todd Pletcher and Bob Baffert had their 90-minute conversation, and some interesting things came up out of it. We were on the air, of course, but the kids, watching them circle Baffert and Pletcher and take pictures and ask questions, and both Todd and Bob Baffert giving as much time as the kids wanted. And they both have taken on, I know, just from proximity to the New York Pletcher barn, have taken kids on as interns during during their mentoring periods. And you also see them, they've got the mentor lunch, and they get paired up with industry veterans in any area. Not just the training. Yesterday was heavily training, because the Matt O'Connor story is really amazing. That at his young age, he's going to step right out into it and be ready. It's obvious that he's got a plan and is very much prepared for getting started this winter as soon as he graduates in the coming weeks. So that part of it yesterday, and then the sessions that I could not attend, but certainly we had discussed with Hammer his moderated panel with the horse players, and Jonathan, who we sat with on Tuesday, Marshall Graham added to that equation, and Pat Cummings, and they were very, and I knew they were, based on what Hammer had, you knew what they were going to kind of come out swinging and really challenge the game to, be aggressive, to be proactive, to think, try to think originally and do what, what can be done. I mean, some things are more practical than others when it comes to, the tote system and betting options. Actually, we're going to talk to Pete after the first break, and I know that Marshall, you know, Marshall, who visits with us all the time, and whenever, you know, there's a, doesn't have to be reserved for, you know, specific ripped from today's headlines conversation, but a lot of times it is. I mean, a lot of times it is, you know, areas that Marshall's economic background and you know, practice as an econ professor that, you know, the industry has really welcomed Marshall's inputs. You know, and every time there's every, and he talked about this yesterday, every time there's an important carryover, particularly in the pick fives, which have become the, you know, the most active and regular opportunities. And of course the force outs, the jackpot force outs. I always retweet Marshall's computation of the player's advantage, and anything that can be done. And there were a couple of, there were a couple of interesting proposals, Pat, with his work with the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation. Pat's been working all year on the breakage question, and they've a couple of interesting wrinkles that have been generated about, you know, taking breakage, taking portions of breakage and funneling it in to help neutralize takeout in spots. And so, you know, some original thinking, and, you know, then it's a question of trying to, as Hammer was stressing even before the panel, you know, putting it into practice. But, you know, every time, back to Marshall's computation on player advantage, every time there is one, I try to circulate it out there so that people understand that you can price shop, you know, the sensitivities to, you know, to the takeout issue. And Marshall said he didn't really want to stress it again, you know, because very little movement in that arena seems, you know, seems like it's possible and something that can be accomplished on a broad basis. Hey, we brought this up with Canterbury the other day, with Jonathan and Hammer. But every time we can show that the player, there's opportunities, the players can pounce, you can, you know, you can really pick your spots. And I think that after the good fall racing that we've had since, even, you know, since Breeders' Cup, just these last 5 weeks, I mean, the did you see the aqueduct numbers? Granted, a lot of it helped, was helped by weather, and, you know, bad weather last year, better weather this fall. But aqueduct fall was up 50%. It's outlandish. And that, the reason it is because, you know, there were opportunities and there were big full fields, a lot of turf racing, and even the, you know, the main track racing was excellent. If the product is good and the equations are, you know, acceptable, the players will respond. That's the key message. And so, you know, that's not going to happen every single day at every single racetrack on every single race. I mean, that's a message we try to drive home. But if you're, and I know certain people, you know, prefer to stay focused on a certain, you know, on certain circuits, but if you spin the dial and look around on a regular basis and are willing to try, you know, some places that you don't necessarily, you haven't necessarily played in the past, you'll find, you know, you'll find the opportunities. I'll bring this, you know what, we didn't get a chance to talk to Ed last week. I bring it up with Ed. I mean, Ed DeRose is Ed pants for, you know, pants for gold and for those opportunities, I mean, daily. He's always looking in far-flung. You see him talking about far-flung opportunity, crazy, you know, at places that, you know, nook and cranny racetracks, as it were. But if you look every day, I mean, that's one of the things about looking Mondays and Tuesdays and, you know, and these the conversations we had about Presque Isle over the, you know, over their season. You can find places. That I thought was one of the big horse player panel discussion points that, you know, you should take away. A couple of things that we didn't get a chance to discuss in advance. I mentioned yesterday when I saw Debbie Easter, because at the end of yesterday, Debbie and Frank Petromalo from Virginia and Jill Byrne from Colonial, they got to, if you want to call it a victory lap, okay. I mean, those of you that listened for the 5+ years to Frank and to Debbie, the work that went into breathing life back in Virginia should be, you know, really applauded. It's a real nice success story, and especially when you think about Virginia's contributions as a breeding environment and a, you know, breeding state that has a storied history. So they called it a look at the rebirth of racing in Virginia. And you know, Jill Byrne has talked about how Colonial Management had the opportunity to really do it from scratch. And so that included some safety and welfare initiatives that, you know, that might in the past might not have been part of the planning. And they spent quite a bit of money that you know, didn't necessarily expect to in that direction, but they had a terrific initial meet, and you know, additional gaming centers, OTB parlors, you know, being reestablished, including in Northern Virginia, which has always been a marketplace that has been absent and empty. So there was also the seminar, the conversation about what the added television exposure has meant. And we know, you know, we've discussed this, you know, on and on. And, you know, a lot of times people are quick to critique get-togethers like the symposium, like the roundtable, etc. Well, the added exposure that the game has received on television, a lot of what has happened, and I mean the viewing hours and the viewing opportunity hours, etc., is exponential from, you know, less than 10 years ago. And of course, Naira's work, and particularly the, you know, summer at Saratoga, and they also, you know, the Belmont, they got Belmont, and there's Aqueduct too at times. But all of that is an outgrowth of the Jockey Club's initial reaction to the McKinsey study and the establishment. It was 2 years, I think, right? 2 seasons, the Jockey Club tour on Fox, you recall. And that was enough. That was enough seed planting, you know, to get to the next, you know, to the next layer, the next level of exposure. And the more, you know, racing that is on the way, you know, the way, certainly the way Naira's shows are, you know, 70% of the country has access to those broadcasts. And I mean, every one of them is a Saturday show. It's a Saturday production. So the work that goes into it is unbelievable. And Tony Alivato was there from Naira, but it benefits everybody. I mean, if people, you know, people stumble into it even, it's a positive. So that was one of Wednesday's other discussions. There was the equine population conversation, and that's something, of course, we talk about. There was regional representation, and Jeff Canizzo from New York, and Todd Mostoller from Pennsylvania, and Brian Sanfratello, who, of course, you hear from on a regular basis. You got a new commercial. But, you know, all of these topics, and I know that, you know, I know some people just love to, you know, love to ridicule every attempt to, you know, to broach these topics, but, I've gone to enough of these kinds of get-togethers to know that, and then, you know, the fact that we get to follow them up, you know, in on a daily basis, you know, I see the positive results that come out of, you know, these kinds of discussions. So, I thanks to Wendy Davis and everybody once again. I asked the question about whether this was the end of the year or the beginning of the next year. And either way, it's a great way to wrap up the calendar year and in some ways start the next. And, of course, a lot of fun yesterday with the conversation with Baffert was a lot of fun. And I think we got a lot of nice reaction. I've got quite a bit of news, but we're going to talk to Pete. Tony Black, hour two, and need Tony's perspective. And, again, this is a topic that is fresh in the headlines. You know, the Jockey Guild, from their recent gathering, they feel like the advances in crops has been, you know, so significant in terms of, you know, the benign safety whips. And they do not want, you know, the regulation, the attempts to regulate crop use, to be whittled down to the extent that, you know, that the only time that they could use it is, you know, in the case of an emergency. Very difficult. New Jersey and California pursuing legislative style regulation of crop use. And, you know, the issue is that from a visual standpoint, the critics, this all comes down to how you want to respond to exterior critique. You know, people that say, oh, if they really wanted to run, then why do they get whipped? Jesus. We'll let Tony discuss it. We'll check in with Steve Askin. Get some thoughts on all the two-year-old races that we previewed with Steve last week. Couple of other stories as well to weave into discussion that sort of were over on the side burner for a few days while we were at Tucson. McDynamo passed, and we got to talk about him because he was fabulous, just spectacular. And I think 20, just 22, actually, you know, which is, you know, it's a senior age for horses, but, you know, they can go into their 30s. Do you see that story about the 40 horse that was 40, that is 40? Yeah, I should go find that. Let's take a quick break. Pete starts us off at the races, back home.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
It's a great weekend of day and night racing at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The daytime winter thoroughbred meet wraps up with closing day set for Sunday, December 15th. And after thrilling wins by the Bob Baffert-trained duo of Bast and Thousand Words, get ready for more top two-year-olds in action in the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday and the King Gloria Stakes on Sunday. Plus, don't forget the mandatory payouts for key wagers like the Pick 6, Players Pick 5, Super High 5, and more on closing day. Looking to enjoy the races in style? We have exactly what you're looking for with a day of luxury and fine dining in the beautiful Vessels Club. Or take a casual approach and visit Burgart's, our brand new sports bar and wagering room now featuring the NFL Sunday Ticket. And racing fans, this is the final weekend for the retiring Ed Burgart as track announcer at Los Alamitos. He'll be calling the final champion of champions in Los Alamitos 2 million futurity this weekend. Los Alamitos will have an Ed Burgart bobblehead giveaway on Saturday and a meet and greet with the legendary announcer on Sunday after the last day race. It'll be a memorable closing weekend. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet, and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. BYK to get that $125 bonus. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus, as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
We're back at the races. Day three of Christmas music, which we relish. Pete Fornital joining us, and Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you. That's pretty cool. Who's the artist on that cover?
I'm going to forget now. I think we added it. I don't know. We've only played it maybe once. Maybe last year might have been the first time. Casey will tell us. I forget. Whirling Dervish. Thank you.
That's a great band name.
Yeah. Right?
I've got to give them props for that.
Yeah.
The
Whirling
one that's been sticking to my turntable and that Perrin loves is it from last year or 2 years ago? The J.D. McPherson record. Sucks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's wall-to-wall great. The title cut is amazing, and she loves that. She's already informed me that we're playing that. You know, I do a little takeover, a little friendly takeover of my dad's old radio show for 20 minutes or half an hour every December. And Perrin co-DJs with me. And she's already informed me that Sox is going to be on there. The Miser Brothers from the old Stop Animation Rankin Bass special, whichever one that's from, The Year Without a Santa Claus, I think, that she's told me we're going to play that. So she's slowly building her playlist as she goes. But I listened to that whole McPherson record today, and my God, if that doesn't get your toes tapping, I don't know what will.
You know, it's funny. I was looking for some new songs for this year to add. And although, frankly, we're getting to the point, I think, where we're not going to have any room to add anything anymore. But I saw a name. You know, just kind of thumbing through, and now I'm gonna have a hard time finding it. But I saw somebody it was popping up on the Christmas searches on YouTube, and I'd never noticed the name before. And lo and behold, the other night on Monday in Tucson, we went on the taco tour bus. And we ended up going, it was great. We end up going downtown to cap things off with a ice cream taco, which was very good. Well, because I'm a big
guy. Don't tell Jonathan Kinchin about that. He may just move to Arizona if he hears about the ice cream taco.
Well, the ice cream, they had three different flavors. They had a mint, one. They had a vanilla, regular vanilla, and a salted caramel, and then then dipped in chocolate. The mint was dipped in white chocolate, and
oh my God.
Yeah, they were exceptional. The cone itself was thin and crisp, just great. But now I've got
to
find
this conference next year.
You should
come to the conference next year just for the tacos. Forget
well,
the panels.
Let me thumb through. Here we go. All right. Here's what it was. This was, of course, on this side of the marquee, it didn't have it. I saw the name, Pete, of somebody that I'd never heard of in YouTube, Reverend. I'm just not finding it here. Had never heard of the guy. I listened to a couple of Christmas cuts, and frankly, I wasn't crazy about it. Here we go. I'm going to thumb through here. Bear with me. And we're downtown, and lo and behold, the guy's name is on the marquee at the Rialto.
Oh, funny.
Downtown. And I was sort of taken aback. I said, this is crazy. I had never heard of this guy. And then he's coming. Here it is, Reverend Horton Heat.
Oh, sure. Reverend Horton Heat is a rockabilly guy. I used to play on the radio, Steve, circa 1990. He was a bit of a in between. You know, obviously there was the original, the proper rockabilly era. And then there was sort of that rockabilly, psychabilly, you know, part of the alt scene of the late 80s, early 90s, of which he was an avatar before it. It then took another turn at some point in the 90s. But, yeah, he's really he's good, man. I mean, I remember spinning those records back in WFNP up when I was an undergraduate at New Paltz for a couple of years before I transferred to NYU. Did you get to go to the show?
No, it's not. It's not for a while. Then his name. It's I think in January. But I just was stunned that literally, either Sunday or earlier Monday, that I was poking around for more Christmas cuts, and I listened to and they were good. They were good. Nothing really grabbed me to put into the rotation. Maybe I'll have to now. But then somebody whose name I just that hadn't I had not remembered seeing. And then hours later,
there he is on
the marquee. It was like, this is freaky. Reverend Horton. I'll give you another one that was funny. Last night, flying back, the request went out on Twitter from Delta Downs. And I'm trying to think. I suppose it was Don that asked about a music act for Delta, one of the nights that Delta has a kind of a party night.
Sure. Yeah.
And I was going to answer, and the name that popped in my head to give him an answer was Hezekiah and the House Rockers. And it then occurred to me, that, boy, they've got that Hezekiah himself, had to be old, if not dead. And, that it had been years and years since I had seen them. I saw them at the jazz festival. So sure enough, I go to look them up, and they are long gone, retired, and several members have died. However, Hezekiah himself had just been inducted a couple of weeks ago into a Blues Hall of Fame.
Oh.
And if you've never heard them, unbelievable. Mississippi Delta Blues.
Sounds awesome. I know by name, but I don't know the material. Definitely sounds like something worth checking out.
It's very funny. Hezekiah Early was Hezekiah, and it's just funny because when I went to search and they, after one of the members, I think after Pee Wee died, they kind of stopped playing. But if you seek out some YouTube and so forth and iMusic cuts, Hezekiah and the House Rockers. When you go to the jazz festival at the fairgrounds, and of course you can't go anymore because it's the last weekend of April, the first weekend of May, and so I'm at Derby. And so after going twice in about 5 years in the late 80s, early 90s, I've never been back, but it's one of the greatest times to go to New Orleans, and it's certainly a good use of the fairgrounds off season. Have you been?
I've never been to a jazz fest. No, I guess it's until the schedule changes again. I don't think I will be going. But man, well, I guess it could be fun one year to do Derby in New Orleans. I bet they have a pretty good time down there.
Well, you could go the weekend before. You could go the last weekend, in April.
That's true.
That's an opportunity. But it is amazing. They fill up the fairgrounds, the infield and beyond with tents, and each tent is a certain musical genre, and all weekend, both weekends long, and that's where in the Delta Blues tent is where I saw Hezekiah and the House Rockers. Had to be 89 or 91 or 90. I saw Miami Sound Machine. They were one of the headliners, and just great. And so many. I mean, I should pull out that program. I probably don't even remember all the ones I saw. It was great. It's fabulous.
Good stuff. Any Christmas tunes by Hezekiah and the House Rockers?
That might be worth seeking. I that's a good idea. I will. I'll see if I can't find a Christmas cut or two. You were on hand. By virtue of Marshall and Jonathan, and our conversation. Jonathan sat with Rick and I the other day, and
I listened live. Him. It was great.
Yeah.
You guys got into some really good material. Made some really good points about where we are, and it sounds like that's been there's been a lot of that coming out of the conference this year. I mean, I wish there was an easier way to follow all the stuff from afar. I mean, Byron King, Matt Hegarty, they're doing great jobs on Twitter. keeping people somewhat informed of the topics, but it sounds like there's been a lot of good meat on the bone for discussion.
As always, and you know, I know there's, you know, there's a certain brand of, you know, observer that is just going to, you know, is just going to pan anything that anything like
some
this.
Some people aren't happy unless they're miserable. Let's face it.
Well, it's what's unusual about those critiques is that they're generally, I mean, there's certain topics that, you know, that are going to come up that aren't immediately, you know, can't be immediately addressed and are systemic issues. And so it's tough to move the needle on, you know, some of the topics that are, you know, that are most often discussed and seem to so regularly not have solutions or activity. But much like this whole, you know, injury and fatality discussion, it can't be viewed, a lot of these topics can't be viewed, you know, through a rifle scope. It can't be looked at, you know, as a single view of a calendar date. It has to be a horizon, and it has to be, you know, understood over a period of time. And, you know, one of the real negative side effects of this social media landscape is that everything is right now, is instantaneous, and there's no value of, you know, extended comprehension and you know, appreciating, you know, the wider scope over a period of time.
I think that's well said. Yeah, it's a problem.
It's a huge problem.
You can't solve systemic problems with knee-jerk reactions. You need to have research and integrated plans that take place over a long period of time. And, you know, it's tough. It's an instant gratification world. And it's also a TLDR, too long didn't read world, where it's very hard to get people to look at things from a very high level. And, you know, people want you to stick to a certain character count. And a lot of the problems that have been discussed at the symposium and that I heard the guys talking about the other day, and I hear about on your show frequently when you have industry people on. These are things that are gonna take time, and I'm a big believer, and I know JK believes this too, that it's much easier to affect change from the inside, as opposed to just like lobbing rocks from the outside. Look, I don't even mind the lobbing rocks from the outside sometimes. I mean, hey, if nothing else, I feel like some of the stuff that some folks say on Twitter or whatever makes our opinion seem that much more palatable and reasonable and our goals much more manageable. But I'm a big believer that we can work within the system and accomplish some things that are going to change the game in a positive way. But it takes time, and it takes more time. Even I knew it was going to take time going in with some of the stuff we've been trying to accomplish, and it takes an even longer time than that. But it's a trajectory that's tending towards the ability to make some positive change. So my thought is stick with it, keep grinding, work harder, come up with better ideas, and hopefully we'll get somewhere at some point.
Agreed. There's also the desires or the, you know, the, I don't want to say self-interested elements, you know, but I moderated those back-to-back panels on surfaces, and we did the dirt, and then Michael Dickinson came up to do the synthetic, and Dickinson to me, and I tried to do this with him yesterday, he, you know, talking to him is frequently like, you know, herding a cat, and you know, you you can shake the bag of treats, and that gets him to you, but then, you know, he is. You want to talk about a whirling dervish?
A runoff.
Oh my God! You should have said yesterday. It was unbelievable. I kept telling him for 3 days. You know, I want you to sit down and talk, and we'll flesh out some more of the things about the surf, the tapita. But he wanted yesterday. He wanted to catch Baffert after Baffert's session with Todd Pletcher, and so. While I'm running out of racetrack, you know, we're going to finish up at, you know, at whatever, it must have been 10 o'clock. So, yeah, so coming up to 10, and he's watching for Baffert. And so, you know, he's tough to talk to because he's looking in two different directions for which way Baffert's going to come out of the ballroom. But and then finally, it's funny, as we wrapped up, then right when we wrapped up, Baffert came out. And so I got a great picture of him showing Baffert the tapita because he thinks that, you know, because Baffert has been hesitant to, you know, endorse what feels like a return to synthetics in California. That's pending. He wanted to really, you know, show Baffert, and I don't blame him, you know, what has changed and what could, you know, why it would be good to get behind the, you know, what feels like a movement. Dickinson wouldn't talk specifically, but they are in, obviously they're in discussion about, you know, the potential of putting Tapita down at Santa Anita. The critique that bothers me that he used the other day in our session, where he said dirt has had thousands of years to and you know, why do we have to give dirt any more chances? Whoa!
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Easy for starters. Yeah. We've really only gotten into this in the last. You know, very quietly, I mean, we probably didn't know it, but people like Mick Peterson were working on, you know, the science of main tracks and turf courses. You know, they were working on it. We just didn't know about it. And it's only in these recent years when, again, we've only started to really track injuries and fatalities. You know, this is one of the great ironies of the industry being critiqued. For all anybody knows, we've got a terrific story to tell that 30 years ago, there were way more breakdowns and fatalities than there are now. But right. But nobody was really paying close attention to that. So now we are.
Different world.
Right. Yep. So for them to be indicting dirt surfaces, dirt's had its time, and we don't need to keep... What, hold on. That's just preposterous.
I have a stat for you about this, Steve, when you're ready.
Go ahead.
Well, it's so funny when you look at numbers and people. And look, let me just start off by saying I'm not an anti-synthetic person. I think it very well could have a positive role in the game if not just hot-shotted and rolled out in a smart and cohesive plan that horsemen are on board with. But people talk about, oh, the stats are so much better. The numbers don't lie. The synth is so much better. You know, right now, 99.83% of our races are run without incident. And synth gets that number to, you know, 99.9 or whatever. But like, in the big picture of life, I just don't think it's quite as big a deal as some of these folks think it is, and I don't think it'll satisfy our harshest critics the way that they seem to think it will. But at the same time, like I said, I'm all for putting together a smart plan and one that can be part of the overall PR initiative that we need to justify and explain our existence in the wider culture. So some of this, yeah, that thing about dirt's had its day, had its chance, that's there are compelling arguments for synthetic and integrating it in some way, shape, or form. That ain't the argument. That's a straw man argument.
Yeah. And there are a few of these discussion points. Tony Black will join us in 10, 12 minutes. And I'm going to let Tony, riff again. Not that we haven't discussed it, but the whole riding crop conversation, and to some degree even the Lasiks too. The horse player response to this, and how do we adjust? I guess you could fold surfaces in as well. How do you adjust your play, and how off-putting, or how much influence are these various equations going to be to how often we play and how we how we adjust our play? I mean, Jerry Brown wrote that piece at TDN. It's probably almost a month ago, about the volatility of abandoning Lasiks and the idea that doing that is going to encourage more horseplay is just idiotic. And we can point to the steroid discussion. Oh, players play. If we get rid of steroids, players will they'll respond. Nobody cared. And
it's not going to change horse players' behavior. I mean, I get making some sort of common sense reforms to medication and the whip as part of a larger PR initiative that way down the line could help handle. But horse players are not one horse player is changing their action because of Lasiks or steroids. I mean, synthetic is maybe a different question because it's a fundamentally different game. But I'm very much with you about that, not moving the needle in the short term for horse players.
And I guess the whip is really a central topic for the for the riders. But I can guarantee you that if crop use is regulated, to the extent that it can only be used, for emergency purposes, in case of emergency, break glass. The law of unintended consequences
comes to mind as soon as you say that. And I think we saw some examples of it already in California. Shrewd observers might have noted some examples of what we're intimating in California already. Isn't there a happy medium? Isn't there a common sense thing where you educate people about the cushion whips to show that they're not cruel, and then to manage the aesthetics of it, you maybe limit the blows and make sure the riders give a horse a chance to respond? In the current climate, you can't have guys going over and over immediately to the whip in the stretch on these beaten horses. I get that. It looks horrendous. But, I mean, common sense whip use, there's got to be rules that riders would be down with, and education to the public about what it's really doing, or in this case, hopefully not doing, to horses. Like, I think there's a smart solution. I think it's right in front of us, and it's not getting rid of it completely.
Well, to me, the discussions are always provocative, and they're productive. If at their absolute least, they get people thinking and talking and. Even if some people respond negatively to the whole concept of these discussions, it still provokes thought and hopefully in some cases proactive change. Proactively, let's take a look, Pete, what went on this week. I was obviously a little distracted by being out west, but
Big story was at Naira Bets Contest. Marshall Graham laying into that exacta in the last race. I keep thinking about it, and I really feel it was such a smart play that he made, knowing he was going to get 14 for two and pushing all in on the obvious two best horses in the race. And the more I think about it, I wonder if the fact that it was a contest and there were so many other people shooting in that race, playing, who needed to make more money to get up to the top, if they weren't inflating his price on the exact. It's another fun effect of contests I'd love to study at some point, is what do they do positive to the overall wagering pool by just all the money that's being bet now in the last race of a contest? What sort of opportunities does that create for the rank and file horse player? Because I think Marshall's bet there is evidence that it can be a super positive thing for the overall pool. Marshall ends up with $5,148. I think he took home another $13 in cash on top of that. Michael Webb, who I believe is an At the Races listener, I know he's an In the Money podcast listener, who I've been in touch with on Twitter, he runs second with $4,000. Dennis Montoro, a past Naira contest winner, runs third with $2,800. Rodney Kumoski, a name I don't know, fourth with $943. And then rounding out the top five, Don Chung, who I met a few years ago when he won the Woodbine Mile Day contest, one of my favorite annual events. Always fun to be up in Toronto in September. Don won that one maybe 3 years ago now. Finishes fifth at Naira with $721. Excited to talk to Naira about what their contest plans are going to be going forward. I like this model of having the seeded prize pool. They put $10,000 in, and if you make a good estimate of the money that would have been churned, it ends up being a positive expectation, this Naira Bets contest, not just because all the money in that gets put up as entry fee comes back to players, but because those the takeout gets reduced to essentially zero in aggregate because of the $10,000 that Naira put in to seed the pot. So it's a cool model, and I'm curious to see what they decide to do with that going forward. And now in contest terms, Steve, I feel like it's kind of a dead run to the NHC. I got to get on it. I got to book my ticket to Vegas. I got to make dinner reservations. There's a lot to do.
Well, and there's still time. And of course, other than, I suppose, and Christmas is midweek, so it shouldn't impact the scheduling at all. And with Santa Anita opening on the 26th, obviously the big target on the back. But there's a lot going on, actually. Los Al again this weekend, two on Saturday, and that's a nice opportunity. One at Club Hawthorne as well, Prospect Heights. There's one seat this weekend in Chicago, and of course online, horse tourneys and horseplayers.com. And there's nothing live on Sunday, but then next week, Fairgrounds has got a couple. They got the super qualifier that's coming up, and that's on their card that Marcus Hirsch refuses to say, Super Santa Saturday. you made me laugh the other day. You've got a super qualifier coming up on the 28th online. Horse Players has got an 8-seat Saturday on the 28th. So there's a lot. There's probably close to three dozen chairs that are going to be accounted for over the next 3 weeks. And Pete, I should mention, I had lunch with Keith Shamblin, that must have been on Tuesday. The Bally's situation is going to be very interesting. The ballroom that will host the NHC fits 3,000. So for the first time in memory, everybody will be in one room. And not only will everyone be in one room, there's room for friends and spouses.
Right.
So it should be, I mean, I some people would say, well, bigger's not always better. I got a feeling this is going to be well received. I'm sure some people like, you know, the intimate and you know, being off in the sub, you know, sub rooms and so forth. But I think this is going to be very cool to have.
The vibe's going to be amazing. Can you imagine during a mandatory race the way that room, you know, we get a price in and we see people going nuts? It's going to be so much fun. I love that idea. And, yeah, it makes me think straight away from our broadcasting point of view, just I think that's going to help us tremendously to be able to track people down and maybe do some more Periscope-type stuff as auxiliary content. I'm looking forward to it. I'm always amazed and pleased every year when people who play in the contest go back and listen to all those the replays of all the hours. That's such a nice compliment to us, and looking forward to hopefully creating more great content out there this year. And it feels like the roster of guests just keeps getting better and better. And I just think in terms of the vibe, I agree. Like if I were a player, I probably wouldn't like it, honestly. Like I would have loved the idea of being a Carol in the sports book and doing my own thing. But I would happily accept that, having everybody in one room is just the right thing for an event like this. I think everybody can understand that. And I can't wait. It's going to be fun. And I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of people that I only see about once a year. So I got to get on my horse and get the plans made. The holidays have been sort of all encompassing at this point, but it's time to start thinking about early next year as well.
Well, I was on the flight back yesterday. Actually, I was doing some reservation type work when it came to the travel, and it's around the corner. Whenever we get to this, and of course, we'll be next week is essentially. I mean, we're gonna broadcast up to the 23rd because the Santa Anita opening day card is being drawn on the 21st. So we will do
that's
a show.
Good.
Yeah. So the people will, you know, the players will have a nice 5-day lead in, but we'll broadcast on the 23rd as the last show of the year. But you know, once we get to that, then you know, it just launch pad essentially. off we go into the new year.
Exciting stuff. Well, you've been doing a great job out there. I've been really enjoying what I've been hearing. I'm looking forward to rolling over to stevebick.com and podcasting the rest of it. I think I'm going to save re-listening to the music show for Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. I'm excited to do that too. And so we'll get a chance to talk next week and talk about what happened in the world of contests and whatever other, you know, probably some weird Christmas music stuff.
We'll get, like last year, right? We each came up with a cut, I think, last year.
That's right. We did.
That's what we'll do. All right.
Should it be a new one? I can't remember. What were the rules?
Yeah, I think it's got to be one that we haven't either played or, yeah, it should be something different. Something new. All right.
Looking forward to it. I'll get working on that too.
Looms boldly, Pete Fornatale, everybody, and the In the Money Players podcast with JK, who is everywhere at once. I saw him on a football field last week, and he's all over the place. There's a great. Did you see the picture, by the way, in Bloodhorse, in Bloodhorse Daily or whatever? There came out last night. You know, you get those trade emails.
Sure.
You know,
I haven't seen this picture though yet. What are we talking about here?
The picture is a riot. It's a picture that they took, you know, they take from down below the stage, and it's of the panel table. And so there's Hammer and there's Pat and Marshall, and then there's Jonathan leaning like on his elbow, like he does, and with his head cocked, you know, with that like Dennis the Menace instigator look on his face. And it made me laugh immediately because, you know, that's what he's terrific with, is just being a catalyst and, you know, and just kind of lighting.
Here it is. I just pulled it up. It's, right? Yeah, he's got he, He's got mischief in his mind, that one.
See, if Jonathan is the guy that, had he been a baseball player, he'd been a guy, and I guess this still goes on, that would light hot feet, that would do hot footing.
Keep you on your toes.
Right? He would be that's still a thing in baseball, in the minors. They do that still, I think. Shaving cream in the cleats, and they do that. The jocks do it. The jocks do it all the time. But yeah,
sure. The hazing and the first wind hazing. That's world famous. We got to get involved. And maybe when we have a new guest on the show or something, we can get them to do the shaving cream pie or something like
perfect,
that.
Perfect. Feed for the television. Pete, talk next week.
Cheers, my friend.
Pete for Natal. Let's take a break, top of the hour. And speaking of jocks, and maybe Tony's talked about the pranks that they pull on each other. I want Tony to we've done it so many times with this whip discussion. Are we still allowed to call them whips? Jesus. We'll see what Tony's thoughts are. When we come back, Steve Haskin ahead later. Want to get to Rich Eng. Rich wrote an interesting piece in his ABR column I read on the flight yesterday. I saw that he had tweeted the link about, you know, when is Churchill going to break into the Vegas marketplace? It's an interesting question. And we'll get one more visit into. I do also want to get a McDynamo. I want to. I should have actually been with Pete, because Pete loves, you know, Pete loves the jumpers. We got to get a tribute in to McDynamo too. Back after this, hour two at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's BYK to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
To At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.